From politics to pop culture, we're kicking off 2019 this morning with some of the stories we expect to make headlines in the year ahead. Good morning. Happy New Year. This is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for tuning in. And just ahead, a look ahead to what we can expect in 2019. You can get on the line now and join us. 549-2937. Then later, it's a donation that could save lives. Plus, we'll tell you about a new man-made reef right off the First Coast. All of that ahead. But first this hour, it is officially a new year. What's ahead for 2019? We've been wondering about that, whether it's local, state politics, business trends, or food and pop culture. If you're wondering what's in store for the First Coast and Florida and the nation this year, we've rounded up a panel of local journalists and experts to discuss it all. As we welcome Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics is here.
Happy New Year.
Lauren Titus, editor of Edible, Northeast Florida Magazine. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
And Joey O'Hearn of The Coastal.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to all of you guys. And thanks so much for kicking off 2019 here in Studio 5 with us. And here's our question to callers. What are your hopes for the new year, 2019? What are your expectations? We're talking politics, business, pop culture, entertainment, even food trends around town. Give us a call right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in. We're already getting your comments on our Facebook page. Okay, so much to talk about as the new year begins, but we're going to begin with politics. There is going to be a mayoral election in just a few months, actually less than 3 months, A.G. Gankarski. Hard to believe how quickly this is coming up. And of course, the big political question everyone around town has right now is, will former Jacksonville City Council President Anna Brochet challenge Mayor Lenny Curry as he seeks re-election? Clearly, the Curry team is anticipating that because they aired an attack ad on Brochet over the holiday break. Let's listen.
Greedy politicians for 500, Alex.
This millionaire politician voted to raise her own pay twice.
Who is Anna Brochet?
Right.
Self-serving politicians for 600.
She voted to remove term limits for politicians.
Who is Anna Brochet?
Correct.
Heartless politicians for 700.
This politician tried to block hurricane relief funds for Northwest Jacksonville.
Who is Anna Brochet?
Correct. The answer's easy. Fire Anna Brochet.
Okay, Brochet's spokesperson called the ad misleading and unprofessional, but the fact remains that the election is in a few months and Lenny Curry is already trying to define his potential opponent negatively. Will she run and can she make it a race or is it too late?
Well, that's the question right now. Brochet purportedly has $500,000 of personal money. She's going to, if she runs, engage people to donate to match those funds. We'll see if that happens. But the Jeopardy ad was important because it signaled where this race is going to go if it happens. Curry and Brochet both are going to work to drive each other's negatives up. That's going to be the thing because Brochet's one goal is to get to a runoff election against Lenny Curry because the landscape can change there. I mean, beating Lenny Curry outright in March, it's not going to happen. But she sees if she gets in, May is her end game. And she has a consultant, Ryan Wiggins, who's out from the Tallahassee, Pensacola area. You know, she's going against Curry's consultants, Tim Baker, Tim Baker for sure. And that's going to be a nasty, nasty campaign.
Okay, yeah. It's certainly no love lost between these two public figures. You mentioned the Curry political team, which has a winning record and also a reputation for really sharp elbows. What is Brochet's strategy as she tries to define the mayor negatively? She does have some material to work with. I would think the biggest issue would be the controversy over whether to privatize JEA, which sucked up a lot of oxygen last year.
It did, but I don't know if that's really a starter with voters, because if you look at, you know, state house race, House District 15. The JEA controversy was central to that one. The eventual winner, Wyman Duglin, was lobbying for a company that, you know, was looking to perhaps buy JEA, and Duggan won that race. I don't know if JEA is a big seller for, you know, Jacksonville voters, but what I do see Broche doing is basically saying that Curry's personal style is too combative, is too bullying, as, you know, Broche and Garrett Dennis and critics like to say, and basically define him, you know, his personality as, you know, not compliant with Jacksonville. Because when you look at what Curry has done, from pension reform, you know, from hiring more cops, from Kids Hope Alliance, the criticisms of those programs are not mainstream criticisms. They're political bubble criticisms. And I don't see how you make those resonate by March.
Okay, Tim Gibbons.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't covered the JEA stuff, you know, with the Business Journal from a business standpoint. It's interesting that it very much was an issue that when it happened grabbed people, but you talk to people, it's not, unless it comes back up, and the common wisdom is it's not going to come up, definitely not before the election. People can look and say, you know, sure, Curry should own that because he was so involved in shaping the board he wanted for JEA, but nothing bad happened other than, you know, bringing up the entire Plant Vogel thing to a head. But it's not like, you know, he sold JEA on his watch. So I think AG's right. I don't see voters actually seizing on that as the main issue on them.
And it's 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in a moment. As we look ahead to 2019 here on First Coast Connect this morning, let's talk quickly, too, about new governor-elect Ron DeSantis being inaugurated, happening in just a few days. What can we expect from the Ron DeSantis administration in Tallahassee?
Well, when we look for clues with DeSantis, we can look at these task forces he's doing. He's got education task forces, health and wellness. So you're going to see school choice. You're going to see more privatized type options for medicine, more telemedicine, things like that. You're going to see more school hardening, you know, and so on. But I think one difference you're going to see between DeSantis and Rick Scott is that DeSantis is more willing to play along. You know, whereas Rick Scott basically stood against medical marijuana, for example, I think Ron DeSantis realizes that he's going to get out of the way and let that industry kind of work a little bit in the state because, you know, the industry globally is expanding. So you're going to see DeSantis presenting liberally in some things, or presenting more moderately. It's not going to be Rick Scott part two, and it's not going to be like any other Republican governor you've ever seen. I think the closest analog may be Jeb Bush, in that you're going to see sort of outreach to moderates and Democrats. And, you know, that takes 4 years, but we're always seeing DeSantis trying to reach out, bringing Democrats into the administration, working well with new Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried. So, you know, there's some positive auguries there.
And then the other political note we want to mention before we move on, there's a lawsuit originating here in Duval County against armed safety assistance in local public schools. Just as the initial report on the mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in South Florida last year is scheduled to be released in about 15 minutes, coming out this morning. We're following that lawsuit closely as school districts wrestle with a mandate from the state on how to keep students secure. But here in Duval, we're seeing parents say, we don't believe that people that are being paid a small amount of money per hour to patrol the school campuses with a firearm is a safe situation for our kids. That is going to be an interesting lawsuit to follow.
Right. And that's the classic unfunded mandate. I mean, after, you know, during the session last year, the legislature passed the school hardening bill, Marjory Stoneman Douglas School Safety Act. And, you know, they're going to expand that. You're going to see more cameras. You're going to see more locks. You're going to see more security. But there's got to be money for it. And that's where Duval County ran into issues this year. They didn't put enough money in their budget, and they had to hire school safety assistants instead of real cops. You know, that's a real issue. You know, we've talked in this program before about the potential safety implications, the legal exposure, all of these issues. So this is one that's going to continue. You know, if I were an administrator in the state of Florida, I would have a healthy reserve, because you never know what kind of mandate Tallahassee is going to drop on you. And this is an example of one.
Let's go to your calls now as we talk about the biggest trends of the year. We just talked politics. We're going to talk business, pop culture, and food on the show as well. It's 549-2937. Give us a call right now. Brad is in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Brad, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you. Man, I missed that program while you were gone. But
oh, well, thanks. Glad to have you listening.
I hate to disagree with your esteemed panel there, but the one thing I think that...
And they are so esteemed. They are... Oh, man, are they esteemed. I'm just joking around, Brad. Go ahead.
What kind of throws me off is I think Anna Brochet should leave with the JEA thing. If I look at my young daughter and I say, hey, honey, you can work really hard at a company for a number of years until you're the most qualified person, and then you'll get skipped over by one of the mayor's picks once he gets there. And I think not enough was made of that at the time, you know, especially, you know, not necessarily the Me Too movement, but my daughter can do anything that, you know, any man can do. So it was a very poor example of a woman getting passed over by a less qualified man. And I don't think enough was made of that at the time.
Thanks, Brad. And thanks for the call, Brad. That's Brad at the Beaches. He's referring to the mayor elevating his favorite, Aaron Zahn, to become the CEO of JEA over what many perceive to be a much more qualified internal candidate at JEA, a woman named Melissa Dykes, who'd been there for a long time and under the old leadership of that company was seen as the heir apparent to the former CEO, Paul McElroy. But you mentioned a minute ago, AG, that the mayor's style, purging people from boards and commissions, installing loyalists, throwing sharp elbows, being accused of having a very bullying style. I think that's what this caller was getting at. And Joey O'Hearn, let's talk pop culture for a minute, because you think on the pop culture front, the Time's Up movement and the Me Too movement are going to continue to have a big effect. We'll talk about that entertainment-wise in a minute. But this is a little bit of a local example of that, where a lot of women, I think, were upset by the way that process played out.
For sure. I mean, yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the Time's Up movement. We were kind of saying before we went live on air, I really think that laid the groundwork for what is going to be 2019. I think it's one of those things where there is unification in numbers, if that makes sense. And I think more women are standing up and saying, hold on a second, they should be getting the same opportunities we did. I think we're seeing that locally. And also, like, we're seeing that on a national platform, whether it's Hollywood or not, that more women are saying, wait a second, I'm just as qualified as the man to my right or even the woman to my left. Why am I not being given my chance at this?
And if Brochet gains a lot of support from groups that feel they've been marginalized, certainly women will be a big part of that. She gave a talk on New Year's Day to a group of female supporters.
Looks like about 20, 25 people there from the pictures. I mean, that wasn't exactly a groundswell-looking event. That's kind of the issue. I mean, Brochet's got to demonstrate that she is a citywide figure. I don't know if she has the name ID right now to do that.
Well, not just that. I also think there's the problem with running a Curry's a bully and has sharp elbows and his style doesn't fit Jacksonville. Doing that while being kinder and gentler is really hard. So you either get down the mud and you have the same sort of negative campaign, in which case it's hard to make the point, look, he's being a bully as you're trying to throw sharp elbows.
Let me ask you, though, because I think in today's political climate, especially with the Trump administration, it's hard to care about an issue that was so long ago. So does the JEA issue have any credibility to be the big issue that she can run on, or is it, oh, there's been so much voters haven't even thought about that since then?
I think there is the idea of a pattern, but I mean, AG would obviously know more on this. But I think there's a difference between running on JEA and running on a pattern of behavior.
Okay.
You know, where you do have a more imperial mayorship under Curry than has been in the past.
All right, let me get to a few more calls. Sorry, a few more calls. John is in downtown Jacksonville. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, and a happy new year to you.
Happy new year.
Happy new year, you know, to your panel. And I just wanted to ask you, and this is for $200, for your panel, but who voted for 2016-18? And that is, that was back 2 years ago, and that was our fine project list that had to do with the waterway component. And that is our fine dollars, which is our ad valorem property tax.
I know, but we're talking about trends ahead, John. Trends ahead.
The trends ahead, will we have more or less waterfront access, to our waterways? And the list, if you will be coming up at the next city council meeting. So anyway, I was just wondering, what the panel thinks of access. Are we getting more or less? And I looked at that school board launch, because that was part of that 2016.
I can almost guarantee this isn't going to be an issue in the 2019 elections, John.
Yeah, that's not, I don't really think that's a huge issue for what we're talking about, although we could talk a little bit more about what we're expecting Shad Khan to do with his development along the waterfront, which will increase river access a little bit for some people.
Maybe sort of. Also, the issue of what happens with the landing could be a question there. Lori Boyer has been working all year and is expected to actually kind of come to fruition, at least in part, in 2019 to have more activation of the riverfront. So it's not knocking buildings down and giving access to it, but it's doing more things along the riverfront.
And let's talk business for a moment. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. There are several major projects either kicking off or coming to a head in downtown.
It is. It's actually going to be fascinating. You know, having covered this for a long time, if you look at something like the Barnett Building actually opening up, I mean, that's been a project in the works forever. You're also going to see some major projects actually have, hopefully, shovels, you know, hit dirt this year. The District is probably the biggest one that people have been waiting for years to actually see. There was, you know, that's the one on the South Bank, former JEA property. The developers behind that are very optimistic. They say they're talking to tenants. So that should break ground. Other big project downtown is the Ambassador Hotel, which is, you know where the Ambassador Hotel is? It's basically that entire block.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking at turning it into residential, mixed use. It could be one of those transformational projects that really shape what downtown is like. I've long said we just need a couple wins. The Barnett could be one of them. Something happening with the shipyards obviously could be one of them. But something like the Ambassador, the Jones Building, Jones Brothers Building, where more residential will come. These are things that actually could be the wins downtown needs.
If you're just tuning in, it's our first show of the new year here on First Coast Connect with Tim Gibbons, Lauren Titus, A.G. Gankarski, and Joey O'Hearn, as we talk about everything from politics to business, pop culture, entertainment, and food and drink trends across the First Coast. Give us a call at 549-2937. And before we go to the break, you are tracking one other thing, Tim, I want to ask you about. More direct flights from Jacksonville International Airport? Could it actually become an international airport?
The airport people hope. I mean, their focus is more on the West Coast right now. If you talk to them about the flights that people most want, they're really pushing for, you know, California, but elsewhere on the West Coast seems to be the big wish list of people. You know, Jacksonville has had flights to Canada in the past, getting the international moniker. But don't be expecting to fly into London anytime soon. But if you get, you know, Jacksonville to LA was a route, almost 10 years ago, I think they had. You know, getting a direct flight out to California would be a big win for the airport.
How do you see the stock market slump, the government shutdown, our trade deficit with China? All of these business trends, which are pointing us what you would assume might be a recession in 2019, affecting local business.
Well, clearly what you're supposed to invest in is...
Oh, that's clear as mud. Thank you. Now I feel so much better.
So two things. One, some volatility in the stock market is actually a good thing. We're in volatile times. The idea that the stock market is supposed to keep on going up is a dumb idea when you have, you know, trade wars and actual military conflicts and things that should have the stock market bouncing around. So the idea that we have volatility is not a bad thing. There will, you know, we are in the tail end of the economic cycle. Things will slow down. It's going to affect a range of industries. I mean, you know, residential real estate is going to drop and probably still be up probably 3% or so, but we'll see a slowdown. But I mean, you know, part of it's just the economic cycle.
I hope you're right. Let's take a quick break as we continue talking about the biggest trends we expect for 2019 and your calls and tweets right after this. Keep listening.
WJCT and ViStar Credit Union are proud to present the 6th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $35. Learn new ways to engage students and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach. Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
To First Coast Connect on 89.9. Happy New Year. I'm Melissa Ross, and it's 549-2937 as we continue talking about the trends we expect in 2019. Now, a little bit ago, we talked about politics and business. Joey O'Hearn of The Coastal is here to talk pop culture. And you see 2019 as another year of the woman, not just in politics, but in entertainment. Why is that?
For sure. I mean, like I said earlier, yesterday was the one-year anniversary of the Time's Up movement, which has already raised $100 million of a fund for legal defenses for, you know, women who needed that art, you know, your A-list celebrities. 2018 was a big year for diversity. You saw Crazy Rich Asians become a massive hit. Black Panther was a massive hit. Both are circling Oscar noms. I think this year is going to be the year of the woman. I think when you look at music, there's rumors that Rihanna, who has been a little bit missing in action for a few years, is going to drop a new album. Taylor Swift, who had a big weekend with her Netflix special. Rumor has it she's already prepping a new album to drop later this year. Cardi B, who had a fantastic 2018, doesn't look like she's slowing down anytime soon. But I also think it's going to be a big year for women on TV. I don't know if you're a fan of Veep. I love Veep. Mm-hmm. Julia Louis-Dreyfus was on a hiatus due to breast cancer. That show is returning this year. People are very excited. I think it's also interesting, though, the amount of A-list movie star women who are going to streaming services. Julia Roberts has a new show on Amazon Prime called Homecoming, getting great reviews. Tina Fey and Anne Hathaway are coming to Amazon with a new show called Modern Love. One of the big stories of the year is Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, which I think we'll find this interesting, Melissa, have a new show on Apple TV, and it's about the battle of mourning.
Why is that funny?
I think you'll find this interesting.
I will find this interesting.
Joey knows what he's talking about.
The concept of the show is it's Jennifer Aniston versus Reese Witherspoon, and it's very Today Show versus Good Morning America. They play morning news anchors.
That sounds great.
Who are kind of frenemies. Steve Carell's in it, which if you're a fan of The Office, it's his big return to quote-unquote TV. I think it's going to be a big year for streaming services in general. Last year it was a big shakeup that Shonda Rhimes, who was the ABC darling, reportedly left ABC to go to Netflix for a nine-figure deal, which people said was around $125 to $150 million, just chump change for Netflix. But also the big thing is that Disney is dropping their streaming service this year, and that has a lot of people worried, because if you're a fan of Netflix like I am, a good bit of their catalog are Disney products.
Disney's streaming service going to be called?
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus. So if you have a Roku or a Fire Stick, you can stream away. Why are so many women turning to these types of platforms over movies and traditional TV?
I think it goes back to Time's Up. I think it's an opportunity thing. I think for many, many years, the industry believed, or at least perpetuated, the myth that women couldn't open a movie on their own. And I think, I don't know if you saw it last year, there was a hit movie of four black women called Girl Strip. It was a massive, massive hit. And I think it really shocked the industry. And I think women, especially big names, I mean, look at Reese Witherspoon, who went to HBO with Big Little Lies, Nicole Kidman. That was a big show for their careers, as well as HBO. You know, Julia Roberts, that's a big name going to streaming service. I think you're seeing it with Jennifer Aniston, who hasn't been on TV in quite some time, going to Apple for the opportunity. I think there's a lot more creativity. I think that's why Shonda Rhimes left ABC without the restraints of a network.
You can create your own content with fewer bureaucratic hurdles, less micromanaging.
Exactly.
We just saw Sandra Bullock come out with a streaming show on Netflix, Bird Box, that did really well over the holidays.
Yeah, they said 45 million. I originally thought it was people, which I thought that's still a great hit. 45 million accounts watched Bird Box in 1 week. It's their biggest original movie to date. And think about, I did the math and I tweeted it out. If it was 45 million accounts, and even if one of those bought a movie ticket, the average movie ticket is $8.12 in this country. That's $450 million, give or take some, that movie would have made in the box office. That's huge.
Those are real numbers, as Tim might say.
Well, right. My question, though, does it have the same impact, considering that
You're not buying a ticket. So, you know, so I have Netflix. I know it was, you had to watch at least, I think it was 70% of it for it to count as a view.
Right.
But it's not the same commitment. If I go out and, you know, get my butt out of a seat and go to a movie theater, I'm committing more. Is there a sense that even a Netflix hit isn't as much part of the cultural conversation because people aren't paying for it?
I think give or take, for instance, there's a movie. I mean, I don't know if you're big social media people. I am. It's my generation that's all about social media. I mean, you can't scroll on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram without seeing Bird Box.
Yeah.
I mean, it is becoming.
It was massive.
It's crazy.
I was flying back from Ohio after Christmas, and there was a father and son seated behind me on the plane, and the son was telling the dad about Bird Box and how he had to watch it right away and how important it was that he watch this show Bird Box on Netflix. So to me, that's the kind of word of mouth you pray for when you create something like this.
Well, also, there's always hesitation. And I just had this conversation with somebody to release a movie around the holidays because, Melissa, you know this. It's hard to promote something around the holidays because all your TV shows are off the air. All of your radio shows are on hiatus. So it's really hard to promote. So poor Sandra Bullock and Netflix are just having fingers crossed that something happens because there were no promotional opportunities.
And they struck gold.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's 549-2937 as we talk about the big trends we expect in 2019 here on our first show of 2019. And now let's turn to food. Lauren Titus, the editor of Edible of Northeast Florida, just a fabulous magazine capturing the culinary trends around town. And you are calling 2019 the year of the plant. Is that right?
Yes. As a longtime flexitarian, I'm really excited to see plants become center of the plate, both locally as well as around the globe, really. Plant-based diets, of course, have been gaining traction for the past several years. And we're going to see plants as the star of meals these days, not just as a protein replacement, but also plants getting their just desserts.
I'm a flexitarian too, so I'm glad to see this. Is this just more and more people waking up to the fact that it's healthier to eat a whole foods plant-based diet?
Yes, it's healthier. There's also so many more options. We're seeing the meat replacements, you know, protein substitutions.
They're getting better.
They're getting better. The Impossible Burger got a lot of media attention the past year as technology is being used to create and recreate some of people's favorite dishes.
Now, on the other hand, we have this push toward local sustainable agriculture here on the First Coast, more of a plant-based diet. At the same time, that poorer parts of town are actually food deserts,
right,
and they can't get access to fresh produce.
Right.
So what about that?
Well, I think it's going to take a public-private partnership in order to address that, because that really is an economic and a social issue that goes beyond just people's access to food. And it's going to take some economic reserves to help address that.
What about new places to eat opening up in 2019?
I think we're still going to see a lot of that happening. It probably not so much the high-end dining, but more fast casual. And also a lot of partnerships between different establishments to create meal kits, for instance, in grocery stores, being able to get a partly assembled meal, take it home, and finish cooking at home.
People just don't want to cook as much the whole way through. They want to make it as simple and cheap
exactly.
and quick
yeah.
as possible. Right?
Convenience food that you can make at home.
Sounds good to me. 549-2937. Give us a call here on the show as we talk politics, business, pop culture, and food trends ahead for the new year. What are your resolutions and hopes for the new year? Stanley is on the north side. Hi, Stanley. Thanks for holding. Good morning. Hey, Stanley, you're on the air. Okay. He must have gotten tired of waiting to talk. Give us a call back, Stanley. Okay. So, you know, over all of these trends, I want to ask you guys, you know, we've got this election coming up. We've got a lot of new projects coming up. We've got new restaurants opening. All of it sort of points to a really active, positive year for the First Coast. What are some outliers or negative trends that you're following? What's on the negative front? What should we be concerned about?
#CurryCrimeWave. That's the one that Garrett Dennis is pushing on Twitter. That's the one that Democrats and anti-Curry people are going to be pushing. You know, we've seen a lot of killings in the streets over the holidays. You're going to see a lot more killings in the streets, especially toward the May election. That's what happened in 2015. That's what sunk Alvin Brown. You saw killings at the worst possible time, including the night of a debate. There was a shooting on a school bus. So, yeah, Curry crime wave, that's going to be the hashtag people are watching.
And certainly any opponent that emerges to the mayor is going to accuse him of not following through on his pledge to make this city safer, to have public safety be a core value, to bring down the murder rate, to bring down gun violence.
Yeah, I mean, he did make that a strong part of his campaigns, opening the door for that. I think on the business front, the negative thing to look out for touches on something we mentioned a moment ago, not so much stock market volatility, but the idea that the economic cycle does start turning. You know, all of these projects, we talk about the shipyards, we talk about, you know, all the stuff happening downtown, growth out in Nassau County, you know, things happening at the beaches. If the capital markets freeze up, it's none of that's going to happen. And Jacksonville, considering where it is in the tiers of cities, if it doesn't happen now, it's going to be a while before anything actually gets momentum again.
And going out to eat, Lauren, ordering meal kits, if we see a sharp downturn in the economy, those businesses may suffer
as
well.
Absolutely, yes. And it'll also slow down new businesses opening, which already have a challenge of finding the you know, financial backing to open their new restaurants.
You know what, though, Joey? One thing I've observed over the years is, and you can go all the way back to the Great Depression to see evidence of this, even when times get bad, people still want entertainment.
Agreed.
They still want to go out and see a film or watch. They'll still pay for HBO or Netflix. People need entertainment.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the recession of 2008, 2009, 2010, that's really when Netflix started to gain traction. And I think no matter the times, like you were saying, Melissa, people do want that escape.
That's right. Okay, Stanley on the north side is back. Hi, Stanley. Good morning.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
My main concern here is ethics and leadership in Jacksonville. And also, when he was talking earlier, because I agree with the first caller, there's 5 or 6, 7, 8 different things that Anna Brochet can attack when it comes to the mayor. I'm a little disappointed with the panel. When they talked about politics, there's many things that we could talk about when it comes to the mayor. But we definitely have a problem with ethics and leadership in Jacksonville. And I was at a lot of ethics commission meetings, and no one showed up. I mean, no one. I mean, but the community nor the leadership called some of the meetings. They didn't even have a quorum at the meeting. And they still made decisions without a quorum.
Wow. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stanley. And I think that is certainly a narrative that Anna Brochet will try to drive if she does run. The Curry administration has not been ethical. That will certainly be her accusation.
Yeah. I mean, and if she has enough money to push that narrative, maybe she can make it get traction with the average voter that's not even paying attention yet.
Okay, that's right. We're paying attention, but it's only January 2nd. But Happy New Year, everyone. And thanks so much for being here to kick off the new year with us. Tim Gibbons of the Business Journal, A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics, Lauren Titus of Edible, and Joey O'Hearn of The Coastal. Hope to see you all again soon. Thanks for stopping by this morning.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead up next, how you could potentially help save someone's life this month just by donating blood. They need donations in January. And then later, creating a new sunken treasure right off the first coast. We'll be right back.
Jacksonville Magazine's second annual Jacksonville Lantern Parade is Saturday, February 16th. The illuminated celebration of creativity, music, kids, and the St. John's River is open to the public. Participants should bring something that glows, twinkles, or shines. More at JacksonvilleLanternParade.com.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, January is National Blood Donor Month. It's a month set aside to pay tribute to voluntary existing blood donors and increase donations by others. And it's really important to do this in January, when donations tend to drop off. Dave Halverson is District Director of LifeSouth Community Blood Centers, and he joins us now to tell us how we could all potentially help save someone's life this month. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So this is the 50th anniversary of National Blood Donor Month. I guess we have to go all the way back to the Nixon administration for this.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
And so this began 50 years ago just as a way to get more people to consider donating blood.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us about it.
Okay. So it's National Blood Donor Month, which is in January, and it was started in 1970. And this is the 50th year, and it is for us to say thank you, number one, to all the voluntary blood donors that we have, and then try to get, of course, more blood donors to come out.
And why is January such a tough time?
Well, normally in wintertime all by itself, with the holidays and, you know, some places are short-staffed and school's out and everything, so the donations tend to come down, and that's the reason why.
Yeah, it's just a time of year when people might be kind of tapped out on their giving, so you have to really get the word out and really push.
Absolutely, yes, ma'am.
Now, LifeSouth has a couple of places around town where you make it really easy for people to donate blood.
Yes, ma'am. We have two.
And please don't call me ma'am. My grandmother was ma'am.
We have two.
I appreciate you being so polite, though.
We have two blood donation centers. We have one on Bay Meadows Way, and then we have one at the Baptist Medical Center downtown.
Okay. So for people that have never done this before, sometimes I think people are afraid to donate blood. They're afraid of the experience. They don't know what to expect. They're nervous about needles. What can you say to reassure people about this?
Well, let me just walk them through the process real quick. So you show up to one of our centers, or you show up to one of our buses, and you come in and we get you registered. And after we get you registered, then we bring you in and we have you do a little mini interview and physical to make sure that you're healthy enough to donate. And then once you get through that process, then we put you in the bed, we let you donate, and then after that, we provide you a snack and a donor recognition item, and then we let you go. And it's just that easy to save three lives.
So for every donation that you make, you're potentially saving someone on the operating table at a local hospital, up to three people.
Yes.
It's that critical. And how low are supplies right now? How critical is the need right now?
Well, just like we said, always in wintertime, donations always go down. So we always need it. And that's and that is something that in summertime, those are the two roughest times of the year.
Okay. So LifeSouth is the sole blood provider for many local hospitals. We're talking all the Baptist Health Hospitals, Wolfson Children's Hospital, Memorial Hospital, and Orange Park Medical Center. So when you stop off and give blood, that blood is immediately transported to one of these hospitals, correct?
Okay.
No?
Not exactly, but yes. So it is give local, save local. So what happens is immediately after you donate, then we still have to process the blood. But after it's processed, then yes, then it goes to one of the hospitals.
And can you share a little bit, too, about the restrictions on blood donations? Not everyone who wants to give blood can give blood. If you're HIV positive, for example, you're not going to be eligible. What are the rules about this?
Right. Well, the initial rules are that you must be at least 17 years old or 16 with parental permission. You must be at least in good health. You need a photo ID, and you must weigh 110 pounds. Now, as far as all the other regulatory stuff, you can see it all at LifeSouth.org, or you're more than welcome to come by our center or call our center, and we can, for specific questions on that.
Do you have to weigh 110 pounds just because kids just can't, they're too little to lose that much blood? They can't do it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is such an easy New Year's resolution that you can do, because approximately 37% of the U.S. population is eligible to donate blood, but only 5% are active donors. I know that there are people that do this every month. That's the donor base that you count on, don't you? Like the people that make this a habit.
Yes.
And how many of them do you have?
Not enough.
Not enough.
Not enough.
Okay. Now, here's another idea, and we've done this at WJCT. Your company or your business or even you, an individual, your church can host a blood drive.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where we get a lot of our donors from as well. So not only the us out in front of a Walmart or Winn-Dixie or anything like that, but people ask us to come to their place of business and host a blood drive. And we work with businesses, organizations, churches, schools. We try to make it as easy a process as possible. We try to take over doing the posters for you. So really, we just need your permission to come, and we will try to make sure everything goes just as smooth as possible.
Okay. And this month, you're sweetening the deal. All month long, donors are going to get some special treats. What are you offering
Yes.
as an incentive?
So as a donor recognition item, you will get a t-shirt, and as well, you will also get a Fandango movie ticket up until January 15th while supplies last.
While supplies last. Okay. It's lifesouth.org as we talk about National Blood Donor Month here on the show this morning. And, you know, I have to tell you, I stopped donating a little while ago because WJCT would bring the truck or the van to the building here, and we would all go and donate blood. But I was tested, and they told me I was a little anemic and that I couldn't donate until I built my blood back up. So I don't think people maybe always realize that they might actually want to donate and not be able to donate. You need the kind of blood that's strong enough to be of use. And you also need certain types of blood more than others. A lot of people don't even know their blood type, I'm assuming. What are the most in-demand blood types? What do people need?
So O negative, we will always need O negative for red blood cells because that's the universal red blood cell donor. And ABs, we need platelets. So if you are AB or O negative, please come see us.
Okay.
But we really need all of them.
Yeah, don't be deterred if you're not one of those types.
Right. So a common thing that we hear is, oh, I'm O positive or I'm A positive. I'm the most common. You don't need my blood. Well, it's kind of just the opposite. You may be the most common, but that's exactly why we need your blood.
Okay. Then get out and donate blood. Just visit lifesouth.org to find a donor center or a blood drive near you. This year is the 50th anniversary of National Blood Donor Month, and this is one of the toughest times of the year for hospitals to have access to adequate blood supply. So make it a New Year's resolution to go out sometime this month and give a blood donation. It doesn't take very long, and you will save up to 3 lives if you just take a little time out to do this. So lifesouth.org, and Dave Halverson, District Director of the LifeSouth Community Blood Center, thanks so much for stopping by on this first official day of our work week on the new year and sharing this life-saving information with all of us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And a quick break, but when we come back, you don't want to miss hearing about the largest reef habitat project ever created off the Atlantic coast. And it's right here in our area. We'll tell you about the Starship Reef right after this.
Jacksonville Magazine's second annual Jacksonville Lantern Parade is Saturday, February 16th. The illuminated celebration of creativity, music, kids, and the St. John's River is open to the public. Participants should bring something that glows, twinkles, or shines. More at JacksonvilleLanternParade.com.
WJCT is seeking creative, innovative, and informative sessions for our Teach Conference on Saturday, March 2nd. Presenters have the opportunity to connect with educators from across the First Coast. Go to WJCT.org/teach.
We're all familiar with online marketplaces like Amazon and eBay, but how about the ones where people buy and sell illegal goods?
What we're looking at is your ability to buy stolen credit card data. Fresh dumps.
I'm Amy Scott, a tour of the dark web, next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, punishment without crime. How our misdemeanor system traps the innocent and makes America more unequal. We'll talk with law professor and former assistant federal public defender Alexandra Natapoff. Her new book is about how the misdemeanor system disproportionately punishes the poor and working class. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The 116th Congress is about to convene. Nearly a quarter of those eligible to vote will be women. That's the highest percentage in American history. Our Across America team reports on the lessons learned from the districts that flipped from red to blue and the rarer spots that went from blue to red. Who's drawing the new battle lines? Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it is a new man-made reef right off our Florida coast. The Starship Reef is being called the largest reef habitat creation project ever deployed. And guess what? It is just off Michler's Landing in Ponte Vedra Beach. Joe Kistel is the project manager for the Starship Reef. He's here now. Good morning and happy new year to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
Okay, so we think of coastal reefs as being made up of coral, but the Starship Reef is actually something that you are building offshore. What is the Starship Reef?
Correct. Well, the Starship Reef is something that most people refer to as an artificial reef. And basically what it is in this case, we use recycled materials. It's concrete, clean concrete. We took it offshore, placed it in the ocean. What happens is over time, that concrete becomes encrusted with things like coral and sponges. Within a few years, you get a very diverse ecosystem. This project was unique in where this concrete came from. We had a lot of community support. So the total project tonnage was probably close to 1,500 tons. So it was two massive barge loads. These barge loads were 140 feet by 40 feet. That was the size of the barge. We did two of those loads.
Uh-huh.
So the first barge load came from Lamb's Yacht Center. They did a major demo of a concrete pier over there. And so all that material went out on a barge. We placed that on ocean. The second barge load came from Gate Precast. Gate Precast actually made us these specific concrete structures that we could use for reef, which was a first for us. We had this brand new concrete. It was designed to kind of mimic our natural ledges. And we were able to take that offshore and place it as well. And so the resulting footprint of this reef is literally about the size of two football fields. It's pretty massive.
Pretty big. And let's explain why these artificial reefs are so important. What's the purpose of creating them?
So the purpose is severalfold. Mainly what we're going to do is create offshore recreational destinations for people like fishermen and scuba divers. So we chose this site with that in mind. This site is off Michler's Beach, which is about 12 miles off the beach, but it's accessible from both inlets. It's about a 20-mile boat ride from both sites. So by creating the structure out there and allowing Mother Nature to do its thing and, you know, all these fish and corals and things to grow, we're creating one, a fishing destination, two, a scuba diving destination, but also this offshore ecosystem that's benefiting our ocean.
This is something that's being replicated all over the world, isn't it? Because our oceans are at risk.
Yeah, so artificial reefs are not a new thing. Jacksonville likes to take credit for maybe starting the program officially years ago, back in the 50s and 60s and when this all started. But Florida's a good example. All around the state, there's artificial reef programs that are very active.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely not a new thing, and it's a tried and true process that works very well.
If you go under the waves, it's amazing what you'll see. A lot of trash, a lot of materials that don't biodegrade. When you go out to the Pacific, there's this trash field that's miles long. The oceans are getting warmer. So ocean conservation, I think, particularly here in Florida, is going to become more and more top of mind, not just for your project, but I would think many other organizations as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame all the issues that we have facing us, not only in the ocean level, but just on a planetary level. We like to think, we can only chip off on so much that we can, but by building artificial reefs, we do think we're taking a step in that right direction, mm-hmm. creating the habitat, and those organisms that are on that habitat do help filter water, create biomass for their fish to feed off of, and so on and so forth. But unfortunately, yes, there's lots of problems. We do see it all at a local level as well. We do see the trash. We do see the debris. We will take boat rides. We see stuff floating in the water. We see balloons. People, please don't let your balloons go. They don't go to heaven. They end up in the ocean. A turtle yeah. eats them and dies.
Right.
We see floating debris. It goes on and on. We also try to do what we call are these reef cleanup programs. And we're trying to scale it up this year where we will send trained scuba divers down to remove things like fishing lines and entanglement hazards from reefs. Mm-hmm. Kind of the double-edged swords with the reef is we are creating a place for people to utilize. So fishermen, scuba divers do utilize them. The result of people utilizing anything is leftover trash, whatever you want to call it, and reefs are no exception. So they do need a maintenance program, and we are trying to fill that as best we can. So we send divers down, remove fishing line and anchor rope and things like that can entangle animals and try to get that out there. And we're hoping this year we'll just scale that effort up quite a bit.
And you'll do that through your corporation. It's called Tesiri. Think it, sink it, reef it.
Correct.
You're creating reefs, but you're doing a lot of other conservation work as well.
Yeah, so we try to keep our overall goal to marine conservation, and a big part of it is creating reef habitat, but those are very monumental projects that take a long time to execute. But we also do these reef cleanups, and we do a lot of educational outreach when we can as well.
Okay, so if you want to see the Starship Reef, it's actually been built. It's offshore, but you can look at it online at Joe's website. It's tisiri.org, T-I-S-I-R-I.org for think it, sink it, reef it, and it's active. It's done, right?
Yeah, that particular project is done. It was back in October it was built.
All right. Well, Happy New Year, Joe. Thanks for being here and kudos to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you and Happy New Year.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Happy New Year, everybody. Enjoy your day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.